Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Paul B. Brown is a longtime contributor to the New York Times and a former writer and editor for Business Week, Forbes, and Inc. He's the author of a new book entitled Own Your Future, and it's published by Amicom, a division of the American Management Association. Paul, welcome to Edgewise.
Thank you so much.
Your basic argument in the book is that everyone will have to think like an entrepreneur in the years ahead now in order to thrive and achieve and be successful. Now, why do you say that?
Well, it's really the culmination of what's going on. I think everybody knows these days that the idea of being a company man is no longer a possibility. So the question then becomes, what are you going to do? And the conclusion is you have to own your own future. And if you're going to do that, that means you've got to take control of it. You can't react to situations because you won't have control. You have to make decisions. You have to figure out what you want to do.
Yeah, but in all of your experience, and I know we have friends and acquaintances who either dabble in this or think about dabbling in it, and it seems to me, and tell me if I'm wrong, that it seems to me that some people just aren't built to be entrepreneurs.
Including me. I couldn't sell my mother a box of Boy Scout cookies on a bet. So it's a really good point. So the premise of the book is not that you have to become an entrepreneur, because some of us are just not constitutionally built that way, but you can take small steps to become more entrepreneurial, at least in your thought and action. And if you stay at your company, that's fine. You'll be more creative at work. Companies want that today. And if you decide, you know, maybe I can do something, maybe your first move is not to quit and start a company, but maybe it's to start something nights and weekends. You build birdhouses. Could you sell some at a craft fair? You're a really good cook. Could you go somewhere and try to sell some of the bottles part-time? And you can take tentative steps toward it. But no, I would never tell everybody, you got to quit and become an entrepreneur, because I'm the last person on the face of the earth who ever wanted to do that.
Okay, so the future is uncertain. Everything is sort of a fog bank we enter and depart from, and there's a new reality on the other side of it. And because of this uncertainty, why should I consider thinking like an entrepreneur or behaving like an entrepreneur?
Because you put the answer right in the question, which is great. The people who are best at dealing with uncertainty are entrepreneurs, more specifically serial entrepreneurs, people who've started two or more companies successfully. And if you look at what they do, it's not that they leap off a cliff without a parachute. They take a very small step towards what they think they want. They pause to see what they learned from taking that step. They build that learning into their next step. They pause and take another small step. And that, to me, seems to be the best way to approach the future. Because it's so uncertain, you don't know what's going to happen. So the only thing you can do is take action and learn from that action. Not huge steps, but little teeny steps. See what you learn, take another step, and go from there.
Okay, now we might have some people listening to the show who are new managers or middle managers, and they might be at a software services or a consulting company like Cognizant. They might be at a products company like Pepsi. They might be in the banking industry. They might be working for the government. What's in it for people in these established big jobs and large, well-established industries? How might they put some of your ideas into practice, and where would it fit?
Okay, so it's a great question, and it has like 19 parts, but let's see what we can do. If you're managing, you want your people to be more creative. So you want to encourage them to experiment, take small risks. You're not going to bet $10 billion of Pepsi's money, but $1,000, $2,000 probably wouldn't hurt anybody. So you want them to experiment. Maybe they come up with a new formula. Maybe they come up with a new market. Maybe they find a new way to sell Gatorade, whatever it is. So as a manager, the more creative your people are, the more successful they're going to be, the more successful they're going to be, the better you're going to look as a manager. As a manager, you can try to do some of this stuff within your own company, try to make your company more entrepreneurial. It's hard. Big companies are bureaucratic. They've got procedures and all that. But again, if you take a small step, maybe the first step is under the radar, and see what happens, and you learn, and you say, I think I'm onto something. You can then go to your boss and say, hey, boss, I've been experimenting with this on my own. It looks like there's an opportunity here. Can I have a bit of a budget? Can I have somebody part-time to help explore it? And if your boss, if he or she's clever, is going to say, yeah, let's give it a shot and see what happens.
We do an awful lot of webcasts and podcasts on the topic of innovation. And it strikes me that as we're passing through all of the programming, there tend to be clusters of programs. And a lot of them are sort of in orbit around capital letter I innovation. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them are in, you know, lowercase. Is there an equivalent on the entrepreneurial side where you have capital E entrepreneur and you have sort of lowercase e entrepreneur?
Yeah. And it's really was one of the motivations to write the book. If all you do is look at the actions of people like Oprah or Michael Dell or Howard Schultz of Starbucks, you're going to say, well, look at that. They took this huge bet, this huge risk, and I needed to be Oprah or Michael Dell to do this. So that would be the capital E of entrepreneurship. It's fine, but you don't learn anything that way. I'm not Michael Dell, so what am I going to do? What's more intriguing is if you look at how they all think, which is what got me to write the book, you'll see the commonality of act, learn, build, repeat. So that would be the small e in your equation. And that's, to me, quite frankly, more appealing. That I can't start, or I have no desire to start, a multi-trillion dollar company, but could I do something more creative? Sure. Could I do something part-time? Yeah, maybe. And so, to your point, the small e pays off a lot.
What difficulties or obstacles might people face when they're moving their careers toward what they want?
The biggest problem is just fear. And the second biggest problem is desire. The fear can freeze you in place.
Paralyze
you. Yeah, it's so scary. I'm betting the kids' college education. I'm going to lose the house. I'm going to lose the mortgage. That's why I keep stressing the small steps thing, so you're not making a big bet. The risks are not that large. The second part is the desire. I sort of kind of think maybe I want to do something someday. And we've all had conversations with friends of ours who say, I've got a really great idea for a company. Someday I'll get around to it. And they never do. So you have to get past the fear, and the desire really has to be there, because starting anything new, it doesn't matter what it is really hard. You're going to encounter obstacles. And if you really don't want to do it, the first time you hit a speed bump, you're going to go, I'm done. So those are the two biggest things. People always think it's capital or finding people, and it really isn't. It's fear first. You got to get over that. And then you really have to have the requisite desire.
Dan Pink wrote a book, his most recent book. A lot of people were kind of caught off guard a little bit by the title of it, but To Sell is Human. And basically everybody does selling and sales work. Is a critical part of being an entrepreneur, either capital E or small e, is a critical part of being an entrepreneur or an internal entrepreneur, this idea of the capability, like human quality of being able to sell?
Dan's right, but it's not really required for this. The key thing in entrepreneurship is not to come up with an idea from scratch. If you came up with an idea from scratch for the Polaroid camera or lenses that change color in the sunlight, then you really have to sell. People don't know what it is. They don't have a context. You really have to keep pushing and explaining what it is. But 99% of the companies that work, 99.5% of the companies that work, are based on the premise, I've discovered a market need, and I've got a way to fill it. If that's the case, I can go to you and say, hey, I noticed that you're looking for X. Well, I happen to have X. Are you interested? In one sense, that's selling. But on the other hand, it's simply just presenting something new to somebody. And in essence, they sell themselves. So we get back to me selling my mother Boy Scout cookies. I couldn't do it, but my mother really loved Thin Mints. So I said, hey, Mom, I got Thin Mints. You love Thin Mints. Oh, well, I'll take 10 boxes of that. If I said, Mom, let me sell you 10 boxes of cookies, she would have said no. But I gave her something she wanted. She bought them.
What role does education or training or practice play in this process?
Some, but it's not as important as you would think. The training and education and practice will sensitize you to the needs in the marketplace. Because you're spending time with people, you'll notice that they're struggling opening a can of cat food. Oh, well, maybe if I created cat food with an easier opening can, it'd be positioned. So it's that sort of thing. But in terms of being dispositive of success, not really. Smart is always good. It's better to be smart than not. But do you have to have an IQ of 190 to start a successful company? No.
The real superpower that might be associated with this effort is confidence, it's courage, and it's action, correct?
Yeah, and I would stress the last one. Action really does trump everything. If all you do is sit around and think great thoughts about what your company could be, at the end of the day, all you're going to have is great thoughts. Nothing happens until you take that first small step. And once you do, you find out you're right, or you find out you're wrong, or you find out you were close. You mm-hmm. thought the market wanted X. They say they really want Z. You go, I could do Z. It's sort of related to X, and do it from there. But again, until you take an action and see how the universe reacts, nothing happens.
Right. How have you personally practiced what you preach in this book?
It's a funny story now in retrospect.
They're all funny afterwards, aren't they?
It really is. President Kennedy once said he became a hero because they sunk his boat. I became an entrepreneur because I got fired. It really was that simple. I worked for a magazine. It was a family-owned magazine. I was second in command. One day the owner came in and he said he wanted to list himself as publisher and editor-in-chief. It's his magazine. He can do that. But in essence, that knocked my boss, who was the editor, down a level. And I was always raised to talk to people directly if you disagreed with something as opposed to talking behind their back. So I went to the owner and I said, look, it's your candy store. If you want to be editor-in-chief and publisher, that's fine. But I think you're cutting the legs out of my boss. Let me tell you why I think it's a bad idea. And I went on for 2 or 3 minutes. And the owner looked at me. And at the end of it, he said, Paul, I'm really proud of you. It takes a lot of guts for an employee to confront the boss. I'm really glad that you did this. How much are you making? And I told him, and he said, great, here's a $20,000 raise. So I go home, and I'm sitting on the top of the world. I'm saying, look, I did the right thing, and I got a raise, and I've got 4 little kids, and life is good. I walked into the office the next day, and there's a note, come see me, from the owner. I walked down to his office, and he says, Paul, I've been thinking a lot about our conversation yesterday. You're fired. You don't even have to go back to your office. We'll pack it up for you and send your stuff to you. I wish you the best of luck. And all I had ever wanted to do in my life was be a magazine guy. All I wanted to do was write stories, and they made me an editor. I thought that was fine. And so here I am. I got a wife who doesn't work. I got 4 little kids.
Okay, I'm looking for the humor, Paul. When is the funny part coming?
Well, the funny part was after 2 days of the phone not ringing, yeah. I said, these 4 little kids want to eat. Let me figure out what I could do. And so what I actually did was I put this model into effect. I took a small step towards what I thought I could do. It didn't go well, so mm-hmm. I took another small step. It seemed to go better. And eventually I stumbled into whatever it is mm-hmm. I do now. But if I had never gotten fired, I never would have done this.
Yeah. We've been speaking to Paul B. Brown. He's author of a great new book entitled Own Your Future. It's published by AMACOM, division of the American Management Association. Paul, thanks for being with us here today.
Oh, thank you so much.
Follow the American Management Association on Twitter to learn about upcoming free programs, the latest news, management insights, and special offers. You can follow us at AMANET. That's AMANET. Hope to tweet to you real soon. Here at the AMA, we value your feedback. If you've ever attended any of our webcasts, webinars, or seminars, you've no doubt encountered our feedback surveys. Well, our podcasts are no different. You can either email us at podcast@amanet.org or call 800-697-3406. Your comments may become part of a future program. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.